Hello, welcome and thank you for joining us and listening to our podcast, The God Beyond the Bible. Our podcast is released weekly each Friday. The content of each episode is based on the questions and curiosities we all have about God and the Bible. Many of our topics are considered taboo in the minds of the mainstream church. You will find our discussions to be, I think, refreshing and often far from traditional. But we don't just skirt around these complex issues, but confront them head on, and not in the way you're used to hearing them discussed on typical Christian talk shows. I'm Alan Rowland, creator and host of The God Beyond the Bible. As of the launch of this podcast, I've been a pastor for more than 35 years. My co-host is my daughter, Trayson, and our engineer, co-producer is my daughter, Tabitha. Our mission is to encourage our audience, along with us, to open our minds to the reality that God is simply too big to be fully explored or experienced by the reading and studying of a single ancient work. In short, the Bible's not the sum of God, and to think this is to limit what He has done, is doing, and what He will do in our future. So with introductions made, thank you for listening, and let's dive into the topic of the day. Okay, welcome listeners to God Beyond the Bible. This is the podcast by Seekers for Seekers, and just let me say I'm really thankful for our growing audience. And I have to believe that's in no small part because our approach is hopefully refreshing and thought-provoking. And we don't subscribe to the God-in-the-box type Christianity that seems to have dominated a whole bunch of our believing community. We assert that our Creator God is bigger and more loving and compassionate than anything that has ever been written or that we've even imagined. I think some godly guy said, "Eye has not seen, ear has not heard, neither has it entered into the heart of man the things that God has in store for those who love Him." We're all here today. Tabitha.
Hello.
And Trayson.
Hey, guys.
All right. And how about shout-outs today?
Yeah, to Charles in Costa Rica, and also to our anonymous listeners in France and Australia.
Oh, wow. Okay, and let me say, hey, Charles, thanks for the coffee, man. I love that coffee. All right. Now, this podcast, of course, made its debut January of this year, 2019. We don't ever say what year this is, and I'm hopefully years from now somebody's going to be listening to this and say, when did they start doing that? So, and it's been weekly ever since. Started the first Friday in January of 2019, and it's been a weekly podcast ever since. Now we're up to episode 14. Our topic for today is
growing intolerance in society and the believing community.
And we've got segment one there.
Our question is, what is fueling all the division and intolerance that we're witnessing in society?
Okay, good question. And we've got a whole, and let me just tell you right now, it's going to be a whole bunch of questions.
Yeah.
You say you've got all the questions and none of the answers, but we're just going to ask these questions. Let's start with the question, why are we as a society so divided?
We live in a world that's controlled by division. You know, you've heard the phrase divide and conquer. That's what the media and every other sect of power tries to do to us. You divide us and we fight amongst each other and we don't notice any of the bigger things that are happening.
Never approach real issues then? Is it worse than it's ever been? I mean, really, is? I mean, I've lived through the 60s. Let me say right here, I've lived through the 60s and I watched all the stuff and oh, how the media portrayed these crazy hippies. In the 60s, you know, that they were just ruining our world. And come to find out now that if we look at history objectively, we see these people were really really protesting what we're experiencing right now. The results of that right now.
I don't think that it maybe is any worse. I think it's more noticeable with social media. I mean, you can connect with millions of people who agree or disagree with you at the push of a button. So,
well, anonymously in a lot of cases.
Yeah, good anonymous. And you can be just hateful and ugly and everything and be anonymous. Is there promise in the millennial generation of it improving? You know, I read a little rant on, somebody showed me a little rant on Facebook here a week or two ago. Somebody said, the millennials are ruining the world. They're staying home too long. They're not buying new homes. They're not buying new cars. And they're just ruining the economy. They're just a drain on the economy because they're not being American.
Well, I think in some ways, the millennials at least have some hope of improving it as much as any generation, I guess, does. But, you know, we tend to frown on some of the things that they do to try and push that forward as far as, I'm going to go ahead and say, safe places are a big thing that's talked about in the media.
Is what now?
Safe spaces.
Oh, okay.
Where you have somewhere where you can go where you are outside of social media, you are outside of any kind of division or attacks on your beliefs, and you're just there. You're existing in the now.
That could be called fasting today. I think we need to take a media fast. Mm-hmm. I think that'd be recommended for every family. Take a media fast. Have some meals. Have a day. Somebody was telling me about a family that they knew that they have their Tuesday. It's no media. In other words, they eat their meals together. They don't turn their phones on. They don't do anything. No media, no television, no anything. Tuesday's just a day of fast. And I don't know if they're even religious. I mean, I don't know if it's a religious thing. It's just a good thing, maybe. What role, we've already mentioned that, what role does the media play, you know, both commercial and social media? What role does it play in increasing the anger, the hate, and the intolerance we're witnessing in society today? I mean, do you think it's fueling the fires of division?
Oh, yeah.
All media. media.
Yes.
Particularly for social media, because it's something that, you know, being of the millennial technological generation, it's something I'm active on. And I see constantly, you either believe the way I do or you're wrong. And yeah.
I have the right creed.
Yes.
I'm the only one with the right creed and people who think like me.
Yeah. And, you know, I was listening to another podcast last week.
You shouldn't
week.
Do that.
I know.
You shouldn't be doing that.
I know.
No, listen to podcasts, people. We're just teasing.
And they said something interesting, and I had to do a little bit of research on it. And all technology is biased. Whether you realize it or not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's even biased to the extent when you are on social media or using a search engine, they have these things called filter bubbles.
Uh-huh.
And that means that, say, Trayson was a hardcore left-wing Democrat.
Okay.
And she searched Donald Trump. Okay. It's going to probably bring up
all the negative.
The negative aspects of his administration, mm-hmm. and all that. Say I am entirely Republican. I'm a pro-Trump person.
And this, what do you call it, a filter bubble?
It's called a filter bubble.
They know this
by your past behavior online. So what you've looked at, what you've engaged in on Facebook, on social media, what you have searched, the websites, the news sites you've gone to, it's going to do that. So you don't even realize that you're getting biased information.
Yeah.
All the time. You're never really seeing both sides of the issue.
Not to mention when I go to McDonald's, my phone says, how was your visit at McDonald's?
Yeah.
What? have we become a people of extremes? And if so, how do we get to this place? And, of course, the other question, the last part of that question, are most of us trapped somewhere in the middle of all this extreme? So really, have we become a people of extremes?
Well, sensation is the only news. You have to be the loudest, the wildest, you know, the most out there to even get the attention of a large media.
We've already brought up the left wing, right wing, mm-hmm. Tabitha did.
Yeah.
I mean, so you're left, you're this. So now we hear, and you know, me, I'm somewhere in the middle of all of this. I'm not this extreme crazy either way.
And I am too. And I think, I honestly believe in my heart that for the majority, most people are. But it's like Trayson said, the loudest ones are the ones that are heard.
And aren't they making us, aren't they adding to the division, the extremes?
Yes.
I mean, and they're wanting everybody to be extreme. We want you to be all the way this way or all the way that way. Mm-hmm. Well, let's just be honest, and I don't want to get politics all in this, but in elections, it's people like me that they're all of the money is spent trying to persuade, because I'm somewhere in the middle. I'm always the undecided.
Yeah,
I am.
And you notice they know where the far, and I don't even like to use left and right, but they already know the people that are far extreme one way, they know how they're going to vote. The people far extreme, the deciding factor are those people that are somewhere in the middle, and we just can't figure out what these people are thinking.
Mm-hmm.
We can't control their minds and make them, all right, why do we feel we must know about everything that happens worldwide and that we must formulate an opinion concerning the event?
We call that being in touch. You need
informed.
To be in
you need to be informed. Have you ever heard that from the pulpit? I've heard it from the pulpit.
Yeah.
You people need to be, your Christian duty is to be informed. Well, let me ask you this question. Is it really our opinion, or are we merely parroting the opinion of whichever so-called news source we choose to ascribe our loyalty to?
As humans, we parrot everything from the time that we're born, guys. I mean, you parrot your parents from the time you're a year old. That's why you have the accent that you do when you speak.
And I will say this, just because you believe a certain way, I'm not painting everyone in a corner.
No. Let's don't use a broad brush here. Yeah.
But I will say I agree with Tracy. I think we do it without realizing we're doing it.
I do it myself. I catch myself. Well, when you find a new friend and they have one of those words that they use a lot, you find yourself picking up that word casually and using it in conversation.
Don't you think we have a tendency to just categorize people? If I can categorize you, if I can label you, oh, he's one of those right wing. I can tell already he's right. He's one of those left wing. I can tell she's one of those, you know, and we do that, and it is sad. Society has just impressed on us that we have to categorize and label everybody so we know everything about you by the label we put on you.
And yourself. You need to label yourself.
Oh, yes.
Where do you fit?
You need to be labeled, huh? Well, as we conclude segment one, let's take a little poll here. Are we a divided society, Tracy?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
I can't believe you worked absolutely in there already.
I got it in.
I'm always teasing her about using that's her famous Bible.
Listen
word.
To episode one. If you
yeah,
know.
It's okay. We all do it. I use a lot, and I'm trying to stop doing that. Is the intolerance on all sides increasing or decreasing, in your opinion?
I think it is increasing.
I don't know. As far as the intolerance on, you know, the extreme sides, I think is increasing. But I think that you are finding in the middle that a lot of the intolerance is starting to decrease.
And maybe there's a whole bunch of us in the middle.
Maybe there's a bunch of us in the middle.
But we're not hearing from any of those folks because we've shut our radios off and our TVs off, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, basically, that's what's happened. Okay. And that concludes segment one.
Welcome back to God Beyond the Bible. This is a podcast made by seekers and for seekers. We want to again thank everyone who supports our efforts by listening and also by sharing the information on how to become a listener of this podcast. It's okay if you choose to use an alias or a moniker as you subscribe and listen. We hope in the near future we're going to be in a position to give away some promotional items such as cups, t-shirts, and other things to some of our listeners.
How about autograph pictures? No, I'm
just I'm
teasing. And just a reminder, you're not going to be asked for money, and we're not doing this with the intent to profit. And this is an important point because we never want the content of this podcast to be influenced by money or gain.
Right.
And influence that commercial radio and other commercial media can never elude, no matter how dedicated their mission. They always are influenced by the money.
Yes, they are. And in segment one, you know, we kind of discussed the growing division and intolerance in general in our society. So in this second segment, we want to think about and discuss intolerance in the religious community, namely the Christian community, and what effect that may have on the mission of the modern church.
Well, and first of all, is there increasing intolerance in religious community, namely the Christian community or the church? What do y'all think?
I think that there is.
Yeah, I agree.
What do you believe are contributing factors to the increased intolerance in the Christian community? What do y'all think?
Guys, I hate to keep going back and harping on social media, but it makes it so easy to bully and, you know, to push people to try and to push your beliefs on other people.
Maybe put out the thought there that if you don't think like this, there's something wrong. I mean, let's just be honest. The other day, someone showed me something on Facebook that somebody had put and said just plainly, if you vote Democrat, don't speak to me and unfriend me on Facebook and don't because you can't be a Christian. Really? Is that where we are? How utterly?
Yeah.
I would probably just unfriend that person. I mean, all yeah. here, I'm going to start the whole thing, and I'm going to, you know, I don't get on Facebook. I got no reason.
Yeah,
I don't even get
on
Facebook.
So,
okay. I mean, I do have an account, but I'm all right. Well, do you think the Christian talk radio format carries any blame or liability as a contributor to this? What
yes,
do y'all think?
Yes.
I mean, I know
times,
I can ask
yes.
Trayson and Tabitha this. We've all listened to Christian. You know, I would love to just have some talk Christian radio that we didn't get into politics. And, oh, I just hate it. I quit listening. I want to be honest with you. I quit listening in this campaign, this last presidential campaign, to Christian talk mm-hmm. radio. I shut it off and I said, that's all. I'm not listening to this nonsense anymore. I'm done with it.
And problems like that are the reason that podcast platform has gotten so big in the last few
yeah,
years.
Yeah, they're killing themselves. And they're using that idea that, well, let's just do more of it. Yeah. What we need to do is some more of this. We need to be more biased and more... And I'm not. These people, I think, have... But I think the money plays. I think they build... The only audience they're building, though, are people who think like them. Have you ever noticed that some of them, and I'm going to get off of this now, but have you ever noticed that some of them, and they'll have someone that's maybe not a believer on there, or maybe a person that doesn't agree with their views, and they'll bring it up, and you can just hear it in their voice. They can't hardly wait to cut mm-hmm. that person off
oh,
and get
absolutely.
Them off the air.
And one of our listeners...
And then we always end it with, but we love these people.
Oh, yeah.
We love everybody.
One of our listeners left a comment on episode 10. And I encourage everyone, if you have something to
sure.
say, to leave those comments. We sure. love hearing from you and hearing your opinions. But he said, I think many people are turned off by the outside politics of the church, where they basically tell people how they should vote and think on
yeah.
social issues. They're more worried about putting a certain person on the Supreme Court than meeting the spiritual needs of a person.
Well, right out of the lips of someone who
yes.
thinks outside the box there. Well, let's go a little further. What role does judging and people perceiving they're being judged by the church or, you know, maybe other Christians play in all this? What about this judging thing? Have we just got out of hand with the...
I put out a survey a couple of weeks ago
okay.
through... our God Beyond the Bible Facebook page, and you guys can check there because we try and put out some questions and surveys mm-hmm. from time to time. But on this particular one, my question was, have you ever felt judged by a Christian? And I took 100 responses to it, and I gave 4 possible responses. The first one was, I am a Christian and have felt judged by other Christians. 19 out of 100 said yes. They are a Christian and they felt judged by others, by other Christians. 70%, 70 people out of 100 said, I am not a Christian and have felt judged by Christians. 6 said, I am a Christian and I have not felt judged by other Christians. And 5 people said, I'm not a Christian and have not felt judged by other Christians.
That just breaks my heart.
Yeah,
I mean,
70%, 70% of people outside the church feel
people
judged.
That we have
yeah.
the opportunity to come in contact with and show them the love and compassion of Christ, and we are instead.
And what do you do with those folks that say, that's our job as Christians? We're fruit. They use fruit inspectors. We're fruit inspectors. So
uh-huh.
we, oh my goodness. Jesus said, I came not to judge the world. Folks, look at, everybody knows John 3:16. Has anybody read John 3:17? Have we read that lately?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what do you say to the Christians who say that they're being unfairly attacked by society as a whole? You know, there's this whole movement. I know the talk radio, this whole thing. We're fighting a culture war. It's a have you heard that?
Yes.
It's a culture war, and we're just fighting this culture war.
I think sometimes we bring it on ourselves.
I think most of the time we bring it on ourselves.
Yeah.
I mean, we're the ones standing on the street corner yelling, I have it all figured out. I know the answer. I'm right. You're wrong.
I have the right creed.
Yeah.
Everyone else has the wrong. Mm-hmm. And then we become victims, right? We victimize.
Uh-huh,
we make
yes.
ourselves out as victims. We're victims in all of this. Okay, let me ask you this. Has the militant attitude of some claiming to represent the sentiment of the Christian community adversely affected what should be the true and only mission of the church? And that probably is to lead folks towards a loving and compassionate creator. Do you think our militant attitude of some of these groups has damaged that or hurt that or affected that?
I mean, I've talked to people personally that I know and I love and I care about, and they will not have anything to do with Christianity or organized religion because of the way they've been made to feel.
And of course, you know, now let me say the Christian defense, well, it's the media is portraying us
mm-hmm.
like that. We're really not, it's because they're against us. They're all against us. You know, we've had something here in Arkansas. What about the Ten Commandment display on the grounds? And you know, don't get me started. But of course, then, you know, somebody ran over it and then they re-erected it, didn't they?
Yeah.
Put it back up. It's here in Arkansas on the something on the government grounds there, a Ten Command. And then the satanic group came in and they wanted to put a deal there and all of this deal. And here's the whole thing about it, this. We all right here like we are. And I tell Christians this all the time. You own land right on a public road. Did you know you can erect any kind of monument on your own property that you... Why is it so important that we're going to do it on government ground? You can put up Merry Christmas. You can do anything you want to do on your own property. I'm live right here. We all live right here on a stretch of highway. We've got a mile or so of a highway here that we live on, or half a mile or maybe more. I don't know. But anyway, we can erect any kind of sign, any kind of message we want to. Why is it that all we're interested in is something that will inflame the other side?
Well, and I find it interesting, and I don't really understand this concept. We want the Bible in school. We want... prayer in school.
I don't either.
That's my thing. We want freedom for Christianity, but then we don't want to allow any other, you know, when you open that door, you have to allow everything else to be a part of it.
I think it's my duty to teach you girls. It was my duty to teach you girls Christianity, the creed that I believed. Mm-hmm. It was my duty. It's not the public school's duty. In fact, I don't want, because look at all the different, we've talked about this. Look at all the factions of Christianity. Okay, we're going to teach Christianity and we're going to have a Christian government. Now, folks, the world had that for 1,200 years under the Roman Church.
Yes.
Is that what we want to go back to? We called those
the dark ages.
Why do you reckon we called it that?
Well, and I think you have to step back too on the, you know.
And is that really what these folks are thinking about? Are some of these folks thinking that we need a Christian government?
Yes, that's a theological society is the idea.
Okay,
but I think you have to step back with teaching God in school and remember that teaching God is the church's job.
Yeah, it is.
When you
is. That's now why I don't say that we ought to teach the theory of evolution as fact.
No,
I'm not supporting that. It needs to be taught as a theory.
Mm-hmm.
It is theory, but anyway, well, as we close out segment two, let us say that we'd love to hear from our listeners on this topic. Probably will. Please keep in mind that these episodes are pre-recorded weeks ahead, so we hope to dedicate a complete episode in the near future to your thoughts and comments on the various topics we present. Keep your comments coming. And even if you disagree with some position that we may take on a subject or topic, we still want to hear from you. Now, we just encourage you, keep it civil. Hateful and angry responses will be ignored.
Yes.
Welcome back, Seekers, to God Beyond the Bible. We are now in segment 3 of episode 14, encroaching on the topic of division and intolerance in our modern society and among the church and Christian community. In segment 1, we discussed about what we thought was the catalyst or what was fueling all the division, intolerance, hate, and unrest in our society. And in segment 2, we talked about the growing division and intolerance in the church and Christian community.
And that kind of brings us into segment 3 here, where we're going to ask ourselves this question. Using what we know of Jesus from his own words, actions, and events recorded in the Bible, can one find justification for the judgmental, angry, and intolerant language and actions being exhibited by some in the Christian community today?
And with that thought in mind, let's begin with the main event that most folks want to use as a justification of their exhibition of anger, and that's Jesus clearing the temple and the money changers. Interestingly, this is one of those rare events that's actually recorded in all 4 gospel accounts. By the way, thanks, Gary, for pointing that out to us. And there is evidence that Jesus actually did this more than once. If you look in John, it seems, and you look in the other Gospels, that's 2 different times that he did it. But anyway, let's not get sidetracked. Now, just to refresh our memory, this is the event where Jesus turned over the tables of the money changers, and some accounts released the doves and possibly some other animals being sold for temple sacrifice and temple use. And he formed himself a whip, and he drove the people out of the temple that were engaging in this particular business activity in the temple. Some, if not many today, use this event as a justification for getting angry and doing and saying certain things, and they justify their actions by classifying this sort of behavior as righteous anger. First of all, we have to ask ourselves the question, are we capable of engaging in righteous anger? The Apostle Paul said, "Be ye angry and sin not." The question I must ask myself is, can I do this? And the answer is no. Anger is a mix of various emotions. You know, it's envy. It's all kinds of things all stirred up, gone awry in me. I get angry, I lose sense of good judgment, and I say and do regrettably stupid things. Even if I don't express my anger outward so that anyone else sees it, I even think regrettably stupid things. Mm-hmm. And the second thing, one must ask who and what it was that Jesus was demonstrating his frustration over. It was the religious community of his day. And it was because they were profiteering off of the required attendance of the masses to this annual religious celebration of the feast and offerings of the Passover. It was no way to be interpreted as an act of social reform or any way directed towards the Roman government, laws, or leadership. It was directed toward who?
It was directed toward the Jews.
The Jewish leaders. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely right. As close as, now, I'm going to step on some dangerous territory here, but as close as we could reconstruct this event today would be for Jesus to come into our church, break the offering plates, pull the attendance and offering registry off the wall, turn over the table promoting whatever it is we're trying to do, the bake sale, the t-shirt sales, and you know, all the things like that that might be perceived as worldly profiteering under the guise of religion. I mean, you know, the CDT. I'm just saying, guys. I'm just saying. Yes. Now, the question has to arise, and you hear me say this all the time, but was Jesus a social reformer?
I don't think that he was.
Well, it's just, you can't, there's nothing to support it. It is of our opinion, based on the information we have, the Bible, and some other sources, Jesus was not a social reformer, nor did he advocate social or government reform, even though the Roman government at that time was incredibly corrupt. Remember, they sold positions to collect taxes. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they go out and hire, you know, you bid on your position to collect tax and got to keep everything you collected over the tax. That's why they hated the tax collectors. The Roman government tolerated and promoted all kinds of behavior that people of principle might consider sinful and barbaric. Listen, folks, the Roman government was worse than you ever think America might be.
Oh, yeah.
And yet,
right now,
Paul still said that no one is put into power except that God puts them there. And Jesus still said, render to Caesar that which is Caesar's.
And we're going to talk about that. Mm-hmm. And that's true. That's 100% true. Instead, when observed objectively, one is compelled to conclude that Jesus spoke and advocated tolerance in all that he said and did. Let's take the woman at the well. Now, she was a member of a despised sect called the Samaritans. In fact, they were referred to as dogs by the Jewish community. She was of objectionable gender. And for that, I'm talking about that culture of that day. She was a female. And as a female, she wasn't even supposed to be acknowledged or spoken to in the public in the daytime. She had been married multiple times. She may have been, you know, there's implications there that she may have been a prostitute. She was living in a relationship without the benefit of legal marriage. Yet Jesus didn't allow any of these things to distract him from his mission of forgiveness and love. What do y'all think of that?
Well, this is one of my favorite stories, along with the next one that you're going to, you know, but from the Bible, because it shows the true essence of who Christ and who God really is to me.
And I think who we should strive to be in him.
Yes.
What about the woman caught in the act of adultery, whom the religion of the day thought she deserved death? And instead of surrendering to the emotional demands of the religion of the day, you know, Jesus right there, Jesus could have cleared. They could have said, he's one of us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He could have agreed with them, and they would have said, they would have embraced him, said, he is one of us. He's sent from God. But instead of surrendering to the emotional demands of the religion of the day, Jesus turned her accusers and would-be executors away with thoughtful and heart-searching words of reason. What did he say?
Let he who is without sin
cast that first stone. And it said they slowly from, and it specified that, I'm not going to preach here, it specified from the oldest to the youngest.
Mm-hmm.
See, this is a cultural thing.
Yes.
From
yes.
the young, from the oldest to the youngest, they walked away. What are we to make of the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus advocates that his listeners and followers should return kindness when they were dealt persecution and evil? He instructed his disciples at one point to be as wise as serpents, but
as gentle as doves.
That's right. One must not forget his final appeal for his enemies who had used lies, trickery, mock trials, and injustice to get him the death sentence. What did he say from the cross? Father, forgive them.
They know not what they do.
Boy, that don't sound like militant to me. That sure don't sound like some of the things we're portraying today. I'm just saying. Now, I've got to admit here, I'm going to make a confession. Confession is good for the soul. I haven't always preached and exhibited tolerance myself. I got caught up in the early movements of politics, thinly veiled as the Christian duty to vote and support this candidate over that candidate and spread hateful propaganda. Yes, yes, folks, it's hateful propaganda mm-hmm. against those who were perceived yes. as trying to destroy Christian principles and attacking our rights. I was angry. I'm telling you what my emotions were inside. I was angry. Pastoring. I was angry, hateful, troubled, confused, emotionally and spiritually a wreck. The only people, and to top it off, the only people who really listened to my religious political rhetoric were those who already thought the same way I did. I never changed the mind or position of the so-called other side. I only succeeded in more deeply cementing their resolve and further polarizing their perceived opposing position. During this period of my life, the ministering of God's love for all his creation and the evidence of that love being exhibited in his son Jesus were all but absent in my personal testimony and, needless to say, my public testimony too. I think it all began to turn around for me when I sat down and read something that I had never heard preached from the pulpit and never read in a Sunday school book. It was Paul's writings in the 13th chapter of the book of Romans. Listeners, go read. Get you a good translation. The New Living Translation is a great place here to go and read what Paul wrote in the 13th chapter of Romans. It reads part of it like this. First verse, I think. Everyone must submit to governing authorities, for all authority comes from God, and those in positions of authority have been placed there by God. End of quote. Paul goes on and writes that to speak badly and rebel against any leaders is to speak badly and rebel against God himself. He goes on and encourages his listeners to pay their taxes because it goes to support those whom God has chosen to be in positions of authority. Which, by the way, is in line with Jesus' response when his disciples queried him on whether they should be obliged to meet the tax obligation placed on them by Rome. And y'all remember what Jesus said?
Render unto Caesar that which is Caesar, and to God that which is God's.
Indicating that both were necessary and right, and were not in conflict with one another, as the disciples seemed to think. Remember, folks like Peter, they were very close to wanting a political rebellion. Mm-hmm. There were people all in the Jewish community, they were wanting a political overthrow of Rome. And Jesus did everything he could to get them to understand, listen, folks, we're not in conflict here. God's got this.
But you know, and I think in defense of Christians with media and everything bombarding us the way it is, I think sometimes it's really easy to feel like it's out of control.
Well, we want to convince ourselves it's out of control. And then we say, but God's in control of everything.
Yeah.
I just...
It's hard. It's a hard concept. It's something that I struggled with for years, this idea.
Colossians chapter 1. Christ is above, before everything, and everything's under his control. Always.
Yes.
Always. One might argue that these words came easy for Paul because, as a Christian, he was enjoying the benefits of a government that was favorable to his religious philosophies and beliefs. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. Because of the fact that it was the Roman government to which he was a citizen and was referring. Now, I want to make one point here that people often don't think about. And we know this if we've studied any history. The Caesars that were over Rome, they proclaimed themselves to be deity.
And all other gods were acceptable as long as you accepted them as a god as well. But the second that you say there's only one god and it's not Caesar, you have a problem.
And Jesus never took up this fight, did he?
Mm-mm.
I mean, Jesus never took up the fight. Now, just think about it today. If whichever president it was, let's don't say our president today, but any president would stand up and say, okay, as long as you guys see me as God, I am a deity. I am a God. See me there. We would, the whole, I mean, every side would just go crazy. Right. But remember, this was the political atmosphere of Jesus' time. And not one time. You say, yeah, but Jesus knew that he shouldn't approach. We can approach. We got freedom, weakness. That wasn't his mission. Why is that our mission? Why has that become our mission? I mean, to political reform and social reform. Why is that our... I mean, I'm asking you guys a legitimate... I'm asking the audience a legitimate question.
I was going to say, because I do not really have an answer for that. I don't...
Well, it's... I think some of it boils down to... Guys, we don't realize sometimes, and that's a whole nother episode, but that what we call concrete reality is really perception.
Well, we all came from different places in life, and I always say, you've heard me say this before, the ground to the cross is level. The distance to the cross is much farther for some folks than it is for others. Are we ready to conclude?
I think so.
Our conclusion, my conclusion, no matter what a neat, what neat little spin we put on our words and actions like, I had a fit of righteous anger, or I hate the sin and love the sinner, hateful words and actions are just that. And to use God as an excuse to divide and hate is, well, inexcusable.
Amen.
As believers on Christ, no matter what our motivation may be, when we exhibit anger and hate in word or deed in the name of God, we're perceived in the same light as all those religions through time who have used God as their justification to hate, persecute, alienate, judge, and condemn others who do not share a like theological philosophy. An unknown author wrote this, quote, there are two kinds of tolerances. The one comes from indifference. It is a supercilious thing. No matter what you believe, it seems to say, you will have to take the consequences. That does not affect me because I have the right creed. The other kind of tolerance comes through sympathy. You and I do not profess the same doctrines, it says, but we seek the same end, the glory of God and the good of our fellow men. Our points of view, our circumstances, our educations have been different. This road is not easy. Let us help one another. End of quote. In short, as long as the only people we can tolerate are those who share our own theological, philosophical, sociological, and ideological views, and we think that no one but ourselves and those who agree with us have any right to God, country, liberty, or life, we're not likely to ever see much decline in the intolerant words, acts, and behavior of any group of people on any side of any issue, and the Christian community is no exception. In the spirit of the Master who said, I came not to judge and condemn the world, but to seek and save those who are lost, how can we justify a creed that contradicts that spirit? Till next time, from all of us here at God Beyond the Bible, God's grace, peace, and love on all of you, our fellow seekers.
Did you enjoy listening to God Beyond the Bible? Do you have an idea for an episode? Connect with us today. Visit our website at godbeyondthebible.com, all one word, or send us an email at email@godbeyondthebible.com, or you can visit us on Facebook. Just type God Beyond the Bible into the search bar.